How the nuclear deal with Iran could change the global oil markets and what we pay at the pump. From APM in Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill with the Marketplace Midday Update. After years of negotiations, Iran and six major world powers have reached a deal over the country's nuclear program. The agreement aims to curb Iran's production of nuclear weapons, and in exchange, the U.S., United Nations, and European Union will lift sanctions. The deal still has to make it through the U.S. Congress, but if it does, Iran will start ramping up its oil exports. For more, we go now to Julie Niemann, financial analyst at Smith Moore & Company. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
If this deal with Iran goes through and Iran starts exporting more oil, what's it going to mean for the global market?
It's a fantastic development because it means increased global trade. And anytime you're trading with everybody, things get very quiet. In other words, peace does occur. So this is all a positive. But even more to the point, we've got a lot of oil coming in, and that will cause prices to go down. As prices come down, that means global economic recovery continues on because increased oil prices is really a tax. It's not a good thing. We have plenty of it. So this is going to be a real positive for the global economy.
I want to pivot now to retail sales. We have numbers out today that surprised some people by actually falling in June. What do you make of the drop?
Well, this is really Oil Story, the sequel. We're looking at here a big miss on estimates, a little disappointing here, but you can't get agitated over a single one-month report here. The big hit is really gasoline. Gasoline prices have gone up rather dramatically, at least what people have been used to, and consumption dropped. The areas where you're still buying things, food and drink, sporting goods, hobbies, books, music, clothing. In other words, everybody's staying home and having a fine time here. I don't put a lot of stock in having just one single month of retail sales slower. They're only down simply because of the high prices of oil and gas, and there was lower consumption there.
Julie Niemann is a financial analyst at Smith Moore & Company. Thanks so much.
You bet.
Africa has historically struggled to grow its manufacturing base. That appears to be changing in the textile and garment industries. As Marketplace's Adam Allington reports, Africa is being viewed by some corporations as a low-cost competitor to countries like China, Vietnam, and Bangladesh.
According to the International Labor Organization, garment industry wages in Ethiopia run about $21 a month. That's compared to $67 in Bangladesh and much higher in China. Steve Lamar is with the American Apparel and Footwear Association. He says countries like Ethiopia and Kenya have been able to integrate up and down the textile supply chain.
The ability to transform from fiber through yarn into fabric into garment, that will become an additional magnet for more and more sourcing from Africa.
Another driver of growth in the African textile industry are rising costs in Asia.
You know, costs in China, which is the world's largest apparel manufacturer by far, have been going up.
Kimberly Elliott is a senior fellow with the Center for Global Development. China and Vietnam still account for over 50% of all U.S. clothing imports, and she doesn't expect that to change anytime soon.
The shift is still pretty small.
Labor costs aside, Elliott says other costs, such as electricity and transportation, can actually be quite high in Africa. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
After more than 9 years hurtling 3 billion miles through space, NASA's New Horizons probe flew by the dwarf planet Pluto this morning. At least we think that's what happened. Scientists will know for sure tonight if the flyby was successful. The project cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $700 million. John Logsdon is professor emeritus at the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University and is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
How significant is this Pluto flyby?
Well, I think it's very significant. It completes the visit to every planet and, I guess, dwarf planet in our solar system. So it completes a process that started in the 60s with our initial visits to Venus and Mars. Now we've been at every large body in the solar system.
The New Horizons mission has been in the works for over a decade. It cost around $700 million. Would we fund this sort of exploration today?
Oh, I think so. We're debating the timing for a mission to go look at the fascinating moon of Jupiter called Europa that would launch in the early 2020s, and it will be a mission of about the same, if probably a little more, given inflation cost as New Horizons.
What are the debates around funding space exploration, and how have they changed over time?
I think the idea that we should go places and see new things is pretty well accepted. NASA has a planetary exploration budget of about $1.5 billion a year, and that goes up or down by $200 million. But I think it's pretty well accepted that this is something that this country wants to do. So there's a debate among the scientific community of where we go. Do we go more missions to Mars? Do we go to Europa, the moons of Saturn? But I think there's a pretty broad acceptance that this is something we should be doing.
And do days like today with this Pluto flyby inspire more of this exploration?
Well, just think about what's happened today. We sent this little spacecraft, it's just the size of a piano, about 1,000 pounds, 3 billion miles, hit a 60 by 90 mile target. We're seeing things that humans have never seen before. If that can't excite people, what will?
John Logsdon is Professor Emeritus at the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University. Thanks so much.
Good to talk to you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill with the Marketplace Midday Update.